cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to Leadership Transformation Platform, Multiplying Authentic Leaders, Moving Society. Adrian Groenewald and Louis Groenewald, the old man, with you as always. Time for our weekly Leadership Masterclass. Of course, go to leadershipplatform.com for all things leadership. One word, two P's in the middle. Today's Leadership Masterclass, as always, the first half hour, or as we mostly do, is a Leadership Master lesson. And our special guest today is Themba Baloyi, Executive Director, and I like the word founder because there's a whole story behind that of Discovery Insure, and we'll certainly look at that in the second half of the show. But the first half with Themba is talking about authentic leadership. So he's come up with these statements. He's the principles that he believes most describe an authentic leader to him. Themba, it's just wonderful to be with you again. You're at Discovery in one of your boardrooms. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
What's nice about coming to your environment is that it kind of neutralizes it. If you were in my studio, then I would say welcome. You should say welcome to me, yeah, but I'm also saying welcome to you. So it's like it's sort of a dilemma. I feel like it's my studio, our interview with you, but yet it's in your home. So hopefully we feel neutral. Eh?
At least we are willing to share ownership.
Yeah, we share ownership of the situation. All right, Themba has shared with us, myself and the old man, some principles about eight, I believe, that to him most describe an authentic leader. And we are on a drive to multiply authentic leaders in our society. That is what matters to us. Globally, we want to do that. We're in dire need of that. So, Themba, the first principle that to you describe authentic leadership is that an authentic leader is selfless. Expand a little bit more on that one.
I think it's an important principle because in many instances, we find people who go into leadership positions because they're going to get something out of it. A leader is someone who goes into a responsibility which might turn out into a position if it does so with a view that they want to make a contribution. They want to create value. It's not about taking away from the position. It's not about taking something out. It's about adding something into the situation, creating and making a positive difference, hopefully. And that's the key thing for me. Those are the things that matter when you talk about leadership in its authentic form, where it's not about selfishly taking something out or grabbing something, but where it's all about, I realize what I've been given, I know the gifts and the talents that I have clarity of what I want to contribute and what value I want to create.
All right, so it's not so much about a bigger package and a nicer title and a corner office. But if we're honest with ourselves, it often starts that way, doesn't it? It starts with what can I get out of it? I'm good at what I do. The business calls me in and says, we want you to lead this team or this business unit. And how many people look at that and say, let me think, can I contribute? Where will I make a difference? It's about, ooh, yeah, this will make me look good. Now I can drive that nice car. I'm superficial here, but it doesn't start out the way you say. Am I right or wrong?
I mean, maybe the sample of one in my case, but I would have a problem if it starts that way because it doesn't have depth. You see the issue with leadership, which starts with material outcomes. Typically, it lacks the ability to dig deep into the issues that matter the most.
Yeah.
And that is where I would caution to say, do not focus so much on how much money you're going to get out of it. Let's look at Mother Teresa as an example. Mother Teresa never did the work that she did purely because she thought she was going to get paid. In fact, she never took a salary. And yet she made such a huge impact. And that's what selfless leadership is all about.
Yeah.
It's not about what title am I going to get. It's not about how much money I'm going to make. Of course, those are byproducts of genuine value-creating leadership. Those are the byproducts where you end up with these things. So I would say maybe it's a sample of one, but my view strongly feel that you can't be pursuing leadership purely because of what you're going to get out of it.
Louis, it's true and it's right. And I think in this conversation, we agree with Themba. It's a big ask in a materialistic, worldly, capitalistic, corporate environment that we find ourselves in. You know, we know why we have an economic crisis. Why it happened a few years ago, 7, 8, 9 years ago now, because of materialism, because of that sort of attitude potentially. So what Themba is raising here is, and then you give the example of Mother Teresa, which is a brilliant example. A lot of heavyweight executives would say, well, I'm not here to be Mother Teresa. I'm here to make money for my shareholders. Now, in that sort of, with that view, I must now go back to my work environment and be selfless. It's the right thing, but not easy.
To some extent, of course, Arjun, with a mature outlook, making money for your shareholders is also part of a selfless attitude in that sense. But I think, Themba, what you sketched there so clearly, there is a big difference. You know, we meet many leaders, as you know, but there is a tangible difference between a selfless leader who has great kind of inner happiness by making people grow around him, and a person who's not. The one has got a tunnel vision, you know. He doesn't see the peripheral things, whereas a selfless person tends to have wide-open eyes and sensitive to things that other people are not. So the truth is, Arjun, we find a tangible difference between the two kinds of leaders, if we have
and
to
we
do
would,
that.
We would agree that we don't have enough selfless leaders in this world. So that's a powerful one, Themba.
I just add something? I mean, doing that contrast between Mother Teresa and someone in corporate and maybe creating value for shareholders, there's a gentleman called Ricardo Semler.
Heard of him.
He wrote The Maverick. He's an amazing guy. He recently made a very powerful statement that those who think of leadership purely as, okay, we'll give back when the time is right. So if you're giving back, you've actually taken too much. By the time you think it's time to give back, you've taken too much. If you can commence with the understanding that your job and your responsibility is to give value, create value, then we're talking a completely different way of doing things. It's a complete mind shift. And that's when you're going to create more value for shareholders. That's when you're going to create more value for employees. That's when you're going to create more value for customers. And that's when you're going to create more value for the society.
What a mind shift. That's a very interesting statement. If you think I'm now at the stage where I can give back,
you've taken too much.
Okay, food for thought. We can have a whole show just on that. The second principle that you believe describe an authentic leader is visionary and not caught up in personalities. Take us on a journey there.
You know, there's a story I like when it comes to this idea of being visionary, because let me just use a very practical example of having to decide that you want to do a comrades marathon. There's a time and place where you have to kind of visualize what it's going to look like when you get to the finish line. That goes a very long way to make sure that you cross the line. But also there's a dedication and the amount of time that is required to train, to eat right, to make sure that you're in a good space in terms of your preparation. But you've got to see with the spiritual eyes. Maybe it sounds very philosophical, but the reality is, if you can't see with your spiritual eyes, it becomes so difficult to maintain a vision. Your vision is taking the invisible and brings it into the visible, and that's how you act on it. That's how you then work towards the achievement of that objective or the achievement of that goal or whatever you've set yourself to do, be it in business, be it in sport, be it... I mean, one thing that Tim Noakes used to talk about, particularly when Josiah Tukwane won the Olympics in 1996, he said there was a very clear visualization process, vision, that Josiah Tukwane had. He knew he was going to win the race, and it was in his spirit. That's what vision is all about. It drops into your spirit, and it mobilizes the body, the physical, to realize that vision.
For some leaders, they already have it before they have it.
Yes.
In their mind. And that can be difficult to translate. Another conversation. Just before we comment on that, unless we move on, is you say don't get caught up in personalities. Meaning there?
So personalities is typically the position where people will say, this is a position I hold. I'm the CEO. I'm the founder. Or I'm the COO. Or I'm the financial director. That's being caught up in personalities in terms of what the position means. instead of actually focusing straight on the vision of what that responsibility is supposed to deliver.
And we have so much positional in the world, don't we, corporate specifically? And then, of course, politics. It's all about minister and director general. And
that's where we lose it. That's where we lose it. Because when you get caught up in the personality of what the responsibility is supposed to deliver, you then deviate completely from the delivery of that responsibility.
Yeah.
But, Timber, that also applies in terms of your vision of that to how you see other people. If you see people in terms of the position or the person, you lose sight of the spirit or the issues or the influences. And therefore, it becomes a personal thing in the negative sense of the word. It becomes focused in on a person. And if you focus on the spiritual side, as you mentioned, then tends to lift it above personalities in that sense. It's so much more powerful.
Yes, and there's a lot of purity in having the spiritual element. Whatever you believe in, I'm not going to be prescriptive, but the key thing, the moment you look beyond the physical and the positions and all these things, you've got a much more long-term commitment to what needs to be achieved. And that's what I've seen.
But Timber, is it true, speaking as an old man now with a lot of research here too, that all the most important things become spiritual? In other words, things that you can't touch or feel or see. All the values, all the character traits we admire so much, you can't touch it. So it becomes pretty spiritual. We use the term spiritual intelligence, and it mustn't have the wrong connotation, but boy, it's what really makes things move in life. Mm-hmm. The principles and the governing universal principles, those things, you can't see it. And you seem to have an affinity for that. And it makes life completely different if you see things that way.
True. And the reality is, because it looks intangible and invisible, there is always that perspective that it may be the easiest thing to do. It's actually the hardest thing to do because it's invisible by nature.
Yeah, and you mentioned comrades just now. We'll speak in the second half about that. You've done your 11th now, pretty much, actually more. But all right, you also say an authentic leader has a deep conviction that is translated into actions that make a positive difference.
It's true. And the reason I emphasize a deep conviction, it's because we all get ideas. We all get a flash of an idea that might be pursued to solve a specific problem. But when you've got a deep conviction, no one tells you what to do. It's self-propelling. You wake up, you are very clear and you are focused because that's what you want to do. You've got this deep conviction that this is what I want to deliver on. And that's what true leadership, authentic leadership is about. It's not about my boss said I must do this. It's not about my shareholders said I must do this or my board told me to do this. It's about a deep commitment to making sure things do come through.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing to see, that deep conviction. We call it commitment, we call it passion, we call it lots of things that probably surround that principle, a deep conviction. And you also speak from experience. It sounds like, again, we'll explore in the second half, you had this deep conviction about Discovery Insure, the principle of it, and it was a vision you had for years. So we'll talk about that a little bit more.
I don't care, just mention that, just to make sure we appreciate the strength of this point. It's not just deep conviction he's speaking about, it's ability to translate, you know, different knowledge and wisdom, and also into positive direction. So some people, I mean, if you look at the tremendous growth of communism through the world, now that didn't go in a positive direction, but it's passionately driven. Evil, some criminals are driven by passion. What you say, that a deep conviction must somehow tie irrevocably with a sense of a positive direction.
Absolutely.
And this makes a big difference.
Yes.
As well.
Because we could be deeply convicted to do the wrong things.
That's it. Well, very corrupt people are pretty passionate about what they do, and we're not speaking about that.
No, not at all.
You also say an authentic leader understands that people are not just tools of the trade.
I'm deeply passionate about this element because when you meet people in the workplace, it's very tempting to see them purely maybe as an accountant, purely as a systems guy, purely as a secretary or whatever function they do. I'm saying those people, first and foremost, they are members of society, members of their families, they play a crucial role in life in general. They are parents, and therefore you can't just extricate all of that and see them purely, let's say, as a business editor or as an author. There's an element of humanness that must come into the equation. This is what I tell my guys all the time. You are not just the tools of the trade. First and foremost, there is someone on the inside of you that we must see come alive. Because if we see your alive humanness in action, surely we are liberating the best in you. And for me, that's the approach that I want to take. And I've been blessed to work with people who understand and have accepted that I really mean what I'm saying, and they've brought their full selves into the workplace as a result. And if we could just switch a little bit, instead of worrying purely about, is he an accountant, what numbers can he produce for me, into saying, this is Adrian, what does he stand for? Who is he?
I think almost any leader out there would realize, with the competitive nature of our society, my employees must bring their whole self to work. Their mind, their heart, their hands, their everything. But some leaders then would not acknowledge that part of their lives. So there's a contradiction there, isn't there? You're saying you need them to bring everything to work when yes. they're there. But don't then just acknowledge the accountant in them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Acknowledge the entire individual, the best self. And we heard this yesterday. We were actually sitting in a leadership conversation with the CEO of KFC. Massive business. Doug Smart. Fantastic guy. And he's saying they really have a culture where they try and bring the best self of people to the fore. Beautiful to hear, and I believe it. I sense it there. I feel it as we engage him. I think that's the spirit of what you're saying, is don't just bring the best accountant out in the person. Bring the best self.
Bring your full self. So when we talk about bringing your full self into the work environment, what it does, it gives you the ability to connect with the work that you're doing. My worry at times is when people are completely disconnected, they're doing the work in terms of ticking the boxes, and there is no soul associated with what they are doing. We don't want that scenario, because you then create a miserable working environment. The key thing here is that people, when they do their work, they must find meaning in what they are doing. And if they can't find meaning, then we might as well employ robots. AI is a reality these days.
Can I ask a question, Temba? Assuming an executive has this kind of mindset, which is deep-rooted implications, how is going to bring this changed mindset into the boardroom? In other words, the traditional boardroom is purely facts and figures and performance, cold and methodical, etc. To what extent can a good leader bring it into the boardroom?
It doesn't have to be cold, Louis. It commences with the people around the boardroom as well. If the colleagues around the boardroom cannot connect with each other at a deep human level, that's where the problem is.
Because
if you can't connect amongst your peers at a deep human level, how are you going to connect with the people that work below you at a deep and human level?
That's definitely part of the answer. Thanks.
Good point. So if we don't have that connection in the boardroom, how the heck can we think that we're having that with our people?
It's not possible.
Yeah. You very often find in the business environment, corporate environment, that leaders have a different facade, or they project themselves differently to their peers, differently to their boss, different to their people.
That's schizophrenic in my view.
It's not authentic, is it?
Yeah.
All right. You also say an authentic leader is very persistent. I would think so. An authentic leader is very persistent, like you seem to be in your life.
Yeah. I mean, when I talk about persistence, I also talk about uncommon patience. And there's a reason I use uncommon patience, because patience doesn't mean that you're sitting and doing nothing. Patience is about consistently and patiently seeking avenues to make things happen. And therefore, it's a typical uncommon way of thinking about patience, because I recently heard some of my colleagues and saying to me, patience may not necessarily be a virtue. And I said, no, but there's an uncommon one, where you are continuously striving to find solutions in a patient way, which means you're not just folding your arms, you're actually doing something about it.
Impatient people really love to rationalize the impatience and say, no, sometimes we do it. We understand that there's need to action. But what you're speaking about, people disassociate or associate patience with doing nothing, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
They misunderstand the spirit of it. The idea of calling it uncommon patience, that's, I think it's powerful, Demba, because that is a very much a working thing, but it's a working thing with vision, with persistence, with a clear objective mind, and it's not just allowing pieces to shatter around you. So this is a very important attribute.
But I guess there are different almost divisions, categories. One can be patiently following a process. Therefore, you are moving forward. And you have a certain confidence in that process. Does it make sense? As opposed to being impatient about the process. And then it comes to people. I can be quite clear about delivering, but I'm patient with how I deal with people. So it can be an interesting conversation, this patience uncommon. You call it uncommon patience. I like that. It gets one thinking on another level about patience, and one could probably come with other words.
But it's seeking solutions to problems,
yeah.
As opposed to, yeah, I'm patient, I'm going to follow a process. Is that process in pursuit of solving a specific problem? Because if it's not, it's a wasted opportunity.
And that's the persistent you speak of, persistent and almost uncommon patience. To seek multiple avenues to find answers to problems is your exact quote there. You're not necessarily say they just endure, or what's another word for
long suffering?
Long suffering could that's a powerful concept. All right, so very persistent, one of the authentic leader qualities. The other quality you bring into the conversation of what an authentic leader is, they are bold and courageous.
And I think we need that the most where we find ourselves in the country, where bold and courageous leadership says, I'm going to speak truth to power, where bold and courageous leadership says probity is above all. Probity means there should be no blemish in the things that I do. Probity means I'm upright. I do what I know to be the right thing. And not because I'm buckling under pressure, not because of peer pressure. And we need that. We need that bold and courageous spirit. And that's what brought us the 1994 elections, the bold spirit of people who were around the table saying we are not going to let this country fall apart. And I think it's upon each and every one of us as citizens, as business people, as social leaders to accept that there is this bold and courageous leadership that's required.
And let's unpack that a little bit in the context of our country. You kind of open that door without getting too specific. It is one thing to stand outside specific structures and be bold and courageous. Let's say the context of opposition party shouting into the government or into the ANC. It's another to be inside a structure that you love dearly and where the value and the reputation of that structure is most important to you and its legacy. And now inside it, you have to be very bold and courageous and stand up against weak leadership. So in other words, if there's wrong things inside Discovery Insure, for me outside as a claimant, let's say, to shout courageously and go to the media and say, these people are this and that, well, that's a different kind of courage. But it's not as courageous as one of your executives sitting you down and saying, Temba, let's be honest with ourselves. This system is not serving our clients.
You know, I like that. It's a practical example because there is always that perception that being bold happens only when you are in exile. No, there were a lot of people in the country that were bold and courageous to deal with the ills of our society at the time. In business, it happens the same way. You can be in an organization. It doesn't mean that it will be smooth sailing. So let's just understand that from the start. But you can be bold and have a conversation with your colleagues to say, this process and that process that we've created is not actually serving our customers to the best of our ability, and have that open dialogue. And fortunately, we happen to have a business atmosphere or a work environment where dissenting voices are encouraged in our place. The question is, how many people are willing to have dissenting voices in their work environments where they can make a tangible, practical, set of recommendations that can be implemented.
Louis, quick comment?
Yesterday, a discussion with a mother who holds a doctorate, whose son is just attending WITS Medical School for the first time, Timber. And he comes from a very successful school background with a lot of interaction and so on. And he finds that you're not allowed to speak up in the university class. There's not time for it. They treat you very negative if you do. And this is a shattering experience for him, because otherwise you can't differ, can't express your opinion, etc. This to her is a very serious predicament. Didn't expect that from a great medical school. So it just shows our society often doesn't appreciate the necessity for being bold and courageous. So very important, I think.
Oh, yes. I've had personal experiences of that type of environment where a dissenting voice is not encouraged. In various parts of my youth, as I was growing up, even now as an adult, I do see those things. But that doesn't mean that it should extinguish any flame of boldness and courageous spirit. I know it's not easy, and I'm not going to make it trivial because I've gone through the experiences. But you got to accept that until such time that we affirm in our beliefs, go back to that point about the deep conviction. When you've got a deep conviction, it drops from your head, from being a thought, right into your spirit, and it leads to action. That's what I call inspiration. And it comes out of that boldness.
And you can't wait to get there. And that's where the action comes in. You also say an authentic leader is a continuous student and scholar.
Yes. It's about accepting that what I know today is not complete truth. There are elements of truth in each and every conversation you're going to have, in each and every book you're going to read. That is why they say you've got a degree of knowledge, because you don't have full knowledge on a subject. You've got a bachelor's, you've got a master's, you've got a PhD. It's only a degree of that knowledge. You don't have full knowledge. And if we can commence any journey with that understanding that I don't have a monopoly over all ideas, it changes the dynamic, because then I become more open-minded and embracing of the possibilities of what you could present to me, as opposed to I know it all and no one can tell me anything. So there is a fundamental shift there where we need to accept that you are continuously going to be learning. My grandmother used to put it in very simple terms, ufunda uze ufe, which means you will learn until the day you die. Unfortunately, there comes a moment, and I don't know whether it's delusional, where we think we know what we need to produce. We know everything there is about what we need to produce. The reality is there is always a room for improvement.
So a degree, the word degree means you know a degree of...
of knowledge. You've got a degree of knowledge.
I've never heard that angle.
You don't have full knowledge.
It does change once. So don't think now because you have a degree in medicine, you now know all... You only have a degree of it, a certain percentage of it.
Don't have full knowledge of medicine.
Nice approach. All right, and then the last point you raise about authentic leaders is an authentic leader really learns from those who have been on the journey. I guess mentoring comes in and all those things. Tell us about this.
So I'll go back to another expression which I grew up listening to, and it has formed my thinking in a very fundamental way. Indlela ibuzwa kwabaphambili. And that is a very basic truth. If you want to learn how to get from point A to point B, ask those who have been to point B. But also there's a power in that statement when they say indlela ibuzwa kwabaphambili, because you can also learn what not to do. It's not just learning what to do to get to point B. You can learn what not to do to get to point B. And for me, that's beautiful. And it's an acceptance. It's an element of humility to accept that leadership is not about all knowing. It's not about knowing everything. Leadership is about a journey of discovery. And that's how I see life.
See, interesting. We launched our Youth Leadership Platform initiative with Sibanye as a sponsor yesterday at the Nelson Mandela Foundation. And it's all about the youth, giving them a voice. And something we have to be careful of, perhaps, is we want to give them a voice. And we start talking very boldly about them sharing their views of solutions to the country and this and that. But they have to keep this principle in mind.
Yes.
So, yes, we're going to let you, we don't want to underestimate you. We want you to be part of the solution, part of the conversation.
But let's remember this principle that you can also learn. And I keep saying that you can learn from those who are currently there because they've been there.
And those who have been there. Yeah.
Learn what not to do and what to do. Let's not start putting you in isolation and saying we're going to give you all the hearing and all the platform so that you can come up with all the solutions without learning from those who have been to point B. Mm. So it's a powerful principle. Louis, last comment before we end our Leadership Master lesson with Temba.
Temba, we've often had entrepreneurs on the program, and certain patterns emerge. And one of the reasons that most entrepreneurs fail, people speak of 8 out of 10, far more fail. We know people start things. And a major thing is you just don't learn from other people's mistakes.
Mm.
You don't consult. You don't open your eyes. Speak to the experts. What a difference it makes. If you got the attitude because you got passion, I know it all, immediately you're on a very dangerous ground as well. So learn from others. I love that Zulu expression. I grew up in Zululand as well, so I appreciate their wisdom around me. Yes, I think you can learn a great deal as well from mistakes. Why on earth do we have to make those mistakes over again? That's why wise leadership is so important.
Temba Baloyi, Executive Director, Discovery Insure, also a founder of that, sharing his views and thoughts on authentic leadership with us. We're now going to interview him as a leader. Stay with us. CliffCentral.com.